Hello and welcome to Bikescape, episode number 60, November 19th, 2008. Welcome to Bikescape, everybody. Coming to you from the Embarcadero of San Francisco. Sitting by the bay as the sun goes down, watching the planes fly by and the ferries come and the traffic going over the Bay Bridge. Beautiful skyline. A little chilly, late November. Indian summer is almost over in San Francisco. Hey, maybe this has happened to you. You're sitting down with someone, usually a person in a position of power, and you want to get, say, a bike lane or some kind of bicycle facility, and you're trying to explain the traffic pattern in a particular part of town and how you want to change it, and words are failing you, and you can see their eyes glazing over, and if you don't catch them in the first 10 seconds, they lose you, and the whole project's down the drain. You have to try again some other time. Well, that happens to me often, and I found that the best way to deal with it, that problem, is to show them a movie. As they say, a picture is worth 1,000 words, and the master of the bicycle and transit documentary is Clarence Eckerson. He's done hundreds of movies now about all different kinds of subjects, the ciclovias in Bogota, transit in Paris, the Vélib system of free bicycles in Paris, and of course his home territory in New York, where he covers every aspect of livable streets and transit and bicycles, of course. So I had a chance to sit down with the enfant terrible himself in the Treehouse, graciously donated conference room of the Bicycle Coalition, and this is what we came up with.
Here we are in the Treehouse, which is the headquarters, the world headquarters of the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition. And I'm lucky enough to be sitting here with the, what is it, the enfant terrible?
Yeah, I heard that.
The great documentarian of bike culture and livable streets culture, Clarence Eckerson.
Yeah, they'd been for a while introducing me as the hardest working man in transportation showbiz, but Aaron seems to have coined a new phrase that a lot of other people like, so maybe on the West Coast that's what I am.
Well, right now it's Halloween. Mm-hmm. It's threatening to rain out there. We have the big picture windows at the SFBC. You can see a 360-degree view almost. And you're getting ready for Halloween. I can tell by the little antennas on your head.
Yes, I'm very excited to be riding my first San Francisco Critical Mass. And, of course, amazingly, it coincides with Halloween. And I'm told that this might be one of the biggest ever because of this convergence.
Yeah, only the rain throws a wrench into everything.
This is true. Yeah. But it's not stopping me. Come on, people.
Well, I have kids, and it does fall on Halloween, so I'm going to miss it tonight. I'm going to be out with the kids having fun. So, what are you doing in San Francisco? You live in New York, right? What are you doing
here? I do. Well, there was the Railvolution Conference was this week, and Aaron and I, who's the editor-in-chief of Streets Blog.
Yes, that's
my
your
sister
employer.
Site.
Yeah.
And Street Films is myself, and I do the films for Streets Blog, and we were out presenting at the Railvolution. We also had a lovely showing at the public library, And we had about 140, 150 people, and it seemed to be very well received.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing out here. And while I'm out here, I'm taking an opportunity to shoot a couple of short street films, including the Critical Mass tonight.
Oh, so we can see that online, and probably in a day or two. You're really fast with
this. You know
what?
Usually in a day or two, but I didn't bring my laptop, so I don't get back till Election Day. But probably Election Night, the way I work.
By the time this gets up, it'll be a day or two.
Oh, great.
So what else is going on? So you're from Street Films, and, mm-hmm. and Street Films is associated with Streets Blog.
Yes, Streets Blog. We're, you know, two different sites, but yet married. And
same graphic design, same basic, looks like one site.
That is correct.
And, what's the purpose of these two sites?
Well, the two sites are to basically, I mean, you know, a lot of people sometimes mistake us for advocacy group or of some sort, but really what we are is we're really just a news media source out there promoting livable streets, which of course includes bicycling, pedestrians, complete streets, green streets, healthy transit, and safer streets for everybody, including the young, the old.
You're based in it's based in New York for the time being.
Yes, but we do have another sister site, Streets Blog Los Angeles, and of course this week we also announced that there will be a Streets Blog San Francisco as well.
Right.
And some funders have been found out here to, you know, help start that up and find an editor in chief, and they will be blogging about transportation issues
in
San Francisco.
So you have a budget. It's a nonprofit with a decent sized budget enough to hire somebody.
Yes, it's a budget, and right now they've been interviewing candidates for the editor in chief position, and I imagine they'll probably also have freelancers and contributors as well. So, you know, people that may want to chime in or write something, they'll probably also accept submissions, and we'll also be doing street films. Not as many as we do on New York, obviously, because, you know, we have a full staff in New York, but we'll be using freelancers, and maybe, you know, I'll come out here a couple times a year.
Maybe Streets Radio, too.
Streets Radio? Yeah. Hey, we've had radio clips on the show.
So the purpose of Streets Blog and Street Films is a news source, you say, and who reads it?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we found that Streets Blog in New York City really helped directly influence and start to change transportation policy for the better. And we found that, you know, a lot of people that read it, they're very high up people in the government, actually, people that work for the Department of Transportation, advocates, fellow cyclists and pedestrians and people that want good change and want to see things happen. And it is also good because it's also good because it allows people to come together on the site, and you'll, you know, frequently see 20, 30, 50, even 80 or 100 comments on some of the articles.
Mm-hmm.
If they're hot button
issues.
Comments. Good comments, bad comments, constructive stuff, but
not a lot of flaming or anything.
Not a lot of flaming. We're really good. We've really found a good mm-hmm. niche where, you know, people, even if somebody does try to inflame the conversation, it seems like people don't bite. They just kind of let that person stew, which is the way it should be.
So you think it's had an effect in New York? New York's gone through some changes lately.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Aaron has done a phenomenal job. He's a great writer. And, you know, both he and I came from an advocacy background first and writing and in my case, filming, you know, as well. And we just kind of joined those things. And, you know, the Streets Blog has you know, you what Streets Blog has done is that it's provided kind of like an impetus for the other print journalism to kind of start latching on because they saw how many people were tuning into the blog, how many people were commenting, how many of the stories were. So in a way, we also generate stories and local stories and you know, tri-state stories for, you know, the local media, New York Times, New York Post,
right.
And in some ways, the New York Times has actually started a blog online called City Room, which is, you know, very similar to Streets Blog in some aspects. It has, you know, a transportation element to it that probably wouldn't have been there if Streets Blog hadn't started, I would imagine, a couple of years ago.
So what's the vision for just for New York, let's say, Streets Blog? What's the ultimate vision? What are you working towards?
Well, you know, it's pretty interesting because right now we have a Department of Transportation that has done some amazing things. And when we first started Streets Blog and Street Films, we were very critical of the government, extremely critical. We did a lot of, you know, in-your-face journalism, a lot of embarrassing stories, a lot of following around people and communities that had been, like, looking for a speed hump for 10 years and, you know, just bureaucracy and delay and can't find the money and just all of this. So, you know, I think it started to some degree really start to, in two ways, one, kind of start to embarrass the city. And you're talking about, you know, a wonderful mayor, Mayor Bloomberg, who's done so many good things on so many levels, and we thought transportation was his, one of his weakest links. So he obviously wanted to improve that. And number two, it also helped motivate the people to see that they had a voice in this. And it's been, you know, a remarkable journey. I mean, you know, now we have the L.A. chapter, and now we're going to have San Francisco.
But now you have some actual proactive things happening in the city. You have what's her name? Jeanette
Sadiq Khan. She's our new New York City DOT commissioner, yes.
And there's a film about it. It's on Street Films. The nice interview with her, and you get to go block by block through Manhattan looking at all the new things that she's done for the city, and it's pretty amazing. And
yeah. One of the most amazing things is, even in that video, that's really some of just the tip of the iceberg, and they have plans for that are even greater than that. You know, it's like we didn't even go into all the little neighborhoods in Brooklyn and Queens, the ones that got a bike lane, or they may have had a little, you know, traffic calming or expanded a little park or the sidewalk. So it's not just even happening in those.
And where is she coming from? Was she reading Street? Would it be presumptuous to say that Street Blog was the impetus for all of this?
Well, Street Blog helped kind of put a light on her predecessor, who is her predecessor was Iris Weinshall, who's the wife of Chuck Schumer. Uh-huh. And she had been there for a while, and she was a good manager. She was, you know, a decent manager, probably one of the, at least, you know, looking back, she was an okay DOT commissioner in comparison to her predecessors.
Lacking in the vision department.
But lacking in the vision, not understanding the whole role of, you know, complete streets and people and on bikes and transit, and not really kind of getting the whole mission. Mm-hmm. You know, like she would rely on her planners and her, you know, architects and stuff to tell her if a street could be, you know, if we could remove a lane of traffic or something, you know, she would always listen to the engineers, and the engineers would almost always say, oh, this is impossible. And then she'd just be like, it's impossible. And she didn't have the transportation background, unlike Jeanette Sadiq Khan, who comes from, you know, a whole laundry list of places that working, you know, in transportation over the years.
So, and you come out of a filmmaking, did you study film? My first brush with you on the internet was Beck TV.
Yeah, actually, it was pretty funny. I started to go to film school and take a few courses, and it was so expensive. I went to NYU for just, you know, 4 or 5 classes, mm-hmm. and then I realized that was like, you know, the video age was the digital age was about to come upon mm-hmm. us, and I started seeing that, you know, the quality was getting good enough, and I said, geez, you know, for the cost of like another class or two, I can buy my own cameras and my own computer and start doing this. And even though I don't know how to do it, I can learn it. So that's what I did.
You mastered the language pretty well. There's a certain language of filmmaking, like an iconography of documentary filmmaking, that you've kind of got it. You've got a nice formula of interviews interspersed with images that what they're talking about, and you illustrate everything that's being talked about. And what I really find interesting about Street Films is that you can take a really complicated story about separated bike lanes, for instance. You know, the average street engineer knows nothing about separated bike lanes, and the average city planner knows nothing, but you can actually put it into a film and show it to them, and they get it right away.
I think that's, you know, it's the biggest compliment we always get is when people are like, you know, you really show how that works, and in very common kind of language. It's not, you know, we're not talking up on a level that only engineers talk about. I think that's very important, is to kind of translate this stuff and get it to the masses, because really that's what the movement's about, is getting more people behind you. And if we stay in this very wonky area, you know,
it can get pretty damn wonky.
It can, and, you know, I'm a fan of wonky, but mm-hmm. I also am a fan of having as many people get behind these complete streets and livable streets initiative. So,
well, even when you're pitching something to a wonk, you have to be able to put it in a way that grabs them.
Yeah, and
able to do.
And you know, you said the illustrating. I mean, that's the thing. Is I was telling somebody the other day. Sometimes I think what I do is more like painting a painting than, you know, than editing and splicing, because once I get down the audio tracks and people explaining it, then I have to go and fill it in, and I use a lot of B-roll, a lot more B-roll, which is, you know...
What's B-roll?
B-roll is basically video over what people are talking about. Okay. So if they say bike lane, you show a bike lane.
Right.
And I probably, you know, during an interview with somebody, you might only see them on screen 10% of the time when they're talking, because I'm really good about documenting and showing what they're talking about and illustrating it.
Video,
and I think that's what helps.
It's all about what it's all on the screen, isn't it? The dialogue's almost not necessary.
Eventually, you know. I mean, you know, yes, you know,
yeah. So, the case for Separated Bike Lanes. That's your most popular film. I was just looking on here, and you've got, what was it, 89,000 views.
Yeah, and that doesn't even include YouTube. That's on YouTube, so we're easily over 100,000 probably on that video.
Yeah. So a lot of people are tuning in. When did that start?
When did street films start?
When did people start catching on? And
it's been more like a parabola, I guess I'd say. It's like, you know, the more and more people that know about it, you know, we've been going to a few conventions. Every time we go to a convention, we go to the World Car Free Conference, or, you know, we're here at Railvolution, and, you know, or we go traveling. Like, I was in Boulder and Boston, and it's almost like, you go and you activate the community. 80% of the people that show up for screenings or want to talk to you never heard of it, Street Films or Streets Blog, and then suddenly, you know, they're watching, and then they become part, and they, you know, they may not check in every day, they may not even check in every week, but they'll check in and see what's going on. So,
and I guess Aaron was talking the other night about setting up a network of blogs.
Yeah,
with that,
Aaron's working on something with this T4 America campaign, and they're putting together anybody who's a transportation or livable streets blogger, bicycle blogger in the 50 states, and I imagine, you know, someday beyond. But the 50 states, and it's all geared towards trying to get this transportation dollars that are going to be, you know, allocated very shortly. It's a very important time, you know, with America. We have a change in president coming, and we have a change in Congress, and we have, you know, gas prices, well, not sky high anymore. I think it's still on everybody's mind. Mm-hmm. Right now we're real, like, you know, the fire, we're ready to strike, and we got to get, you know, people motivated about this even more than they usually are.
Yeah, you have to sort of push this meme of livable streets. It's a complex thought that most people don't even think to try and understand.
Yeah, and it's, you know, so it's about, you know, even these bloggers. Some of these bloggers are in small towns, and they may not even be privy to the fact that there are large, large advocacy groups and people in every city with blogs, or, you know, a group like San Francisco Bike Coalition, or a group like Transportation Alternatives out there that can help them, and that they can join, and they can do lots of good.
So what do you see for the future?
Okay. Well, considering...
I guess we're looking at the future.
It's tough to say because we haven't had the election results yet.
Yeah.
But I think the future is very bright. I mean, I've been in this business since 1997 in one way or another, you know, doing video or advocacy or volunteer. I used to head the Brooklyn TA chapter, Transportation Alternatives. Yeah. And never have I seen this kind of motivation, not only in my own city, but it seems like nationwide. You know, it seems like San Francisco, off the charts. You know, you guys have increase in bicycling, and you even having an injunction, which is stopping.
With no improvements at all in 2 years, we've managed to have a 20% increase in cycling just in the last year.
Yeah, and I don't know if you're familiar, but Jeanette Sadek Khan's office just put out their numbers for just 1 year. 34% increase in bicycling.
And that, yeah.
And you're already talking about a city that has 115 to 125,000 people on a bike per day doing something.
Where's that coming from? Is it just some tipping point that we've reached, or is it some... What do you think that...
I think it's, you know, once again, it's like we're lying in the middle of, like, you know, people are worried about the environment. People are worried about gas prices. I think that the younger people that are now coming into their 20s have grown up knowing that mass transit isn't like this dirty word. It's a thing you can do, and it's fun, and
it's cheap. Never was in New York. It never was a dirty word in New York.
It probably was in the 70s. Yeah. But there's a lot of people working behind these things, you know? There's a lot of people out there blogging. People have shows. People have films. You've got a lot of groups. And and there's a lot of money, you know, to be honest, there's a lot of money getting put behind a lot of these initiatives. I can remember a day when Transportation Alternatives in New York had a staff of 4 or 5. Now they've got dozens. Mm-hmm. You know, San Francisco Bike Coalition seems to have quite a few people.
Every time I come
in
into
here.
This office, I see people I don't recognize. It's scary sometimes. Well, New York has always been... New York still has the reputation around the country that it had in the 70s of being this scary place. And in San Francisco, I remember about 15 years ago, we had Proposition M, which was to limit high-rise office buildings downtown. Mm-hmm. We wanted to have more housing and less people coming into work. And the big slogan was, stop the Manhattanization of San Francisco. And now, you know, 15 years later, we're into the next century, and New York is kind of the place we want to aim at. You know, it's the place where the community is and the place where people aren't afraid to get on a subway. And people know each other. They talk more there, and it's now suddenly we see that they're building bike facilities, separated bike lanes, and the West Side Bikeway.
The most busy bike path in the nation now. Mm-hmm. The West Side Bike Path. It's just incredible. You know, sometimes I have to pinch myself because I think if all the stuff that has happened in the last 18 months in New York would have happened by the year 2020, I would have been like, oh, that would be good. Because I had, for so long, we had been behind the rest of the world, behind other U.S. cities, you know? And now that all this infrastructure is being laid in and going in, and you know, it's, I mean, you know, granted, the amount of percentage of streets that our commissioner and Mayor Bloomberg have changed might only be 1 or 2%, but you know it, when you walk around and you keep encountering these spaces where there's hundreds of people standing and sitting and enjoying coffee where there used to be roads and traffic, it starts to change people's minds. And the most incredible thing about these facilities, and even the biggest naysayer will have to admit this, the minute they put them in, people were using them. They were there. They didn't have to be told, hey, there's a new green square opening down your block. They just went out, they found it, they took their lunch, and they plopped themselves down. And
New Yorkers kind of find their level. They're like water. You know, sometimes they spill out onto the street, nobody seems to mind. Yeah, I noticed that too.
Yeah.
What's your favorite thing that's happening right there in New York now?
The project, well, I think there's two things. The project in Madison Square Park is just the most amazing transformation I have seen, and it includes all, you know, includes walkers, includes cyclists. They painted some green curbside lanes, gotten rid of some parking, benches, and beautiful structures surrounding you, and the sun just baking you while you're sitting. It's just beautiful. But I really think the physically separated bike lanes just shows a lot of promise. And you know, you're looking at somebody, me, I'm very experienced cyclist. Mm-hmm. Do I really need a physically separated bike lane? No. Will I ride in them if they're there? Yes. Mm-hmm. But do I think it's important for younger people and the elderly and people who may be first-time riders? I think that's the people that we need to get on bikes.
Is New York a pleasant place to ride a bike these days?
It's becoming. It's becoming one. I've always... You know what? New York has its plus and minus. Obviously, it's so flat. Mm-hmm. That is just, you know... Anywhere else I go, there's nothing as flat as New York.
Well, people think of New York, they think of thousands of yellow cabs careening down Broadway, and they think of people yelling and screaming, and I'm walking here.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if that's changed. I remember when I got off the plane in LaGuardia I put my fixie together and I hopped over the Queensboro Bridge, and suddenly I was on Second Avenue. And I thought, oh my God, this is New York. This is the big city. And the cars were inches away from me, and I didn't feel like people were making room for me like they do here. Mm-hmm. And it was a little nerve-rattling until I got used to it. Then I got the rhythm, and it was okay.
Yeah.
But I am an experienced cyclist. And I wonder if that's improved since 2003.
Well, you know, there's some avenues. I mean, it's funny that you say that about Second Avenue. Second Avenue is one of my favorite places to ride. You know, for some reason, in New York, you just learn to just take an entire lane and
can you do
ignore.
That without getting thrown off the lane?
You know what? You just do it.
Yeah, vehicular cyclists in New York? Is it possible?
You do. And, you know, it's funny. There's certain places in New York where if you can go 15, 18 miles an hour, you're going faster than the traffic.
Oh, yeah. The facilities that are being put in now, they're coming at the expense. That's real estate being taken away from cars, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, our new commissioner and with the backing of our mayor.
How does that happen in New York? Is there some kind of environmental review, for instance, or do you have to get community input before that can happen, or does it just happen?
Well, it's very interesting because for years, for as long as I've been, like I said, since 1997, I've been involved in this process of being an advocate and being out there and trying to document stuff. And, you know, anytime you go to a community board meeting, if they were like, we want to remove one parking space, people would go completely bonkers.
So yeah, you have the community boards to hurdle over.
Yeah. And, you know,
that sounds like San Francisco. How did you get over that? How did you get past that?
Well, I think, you know, once again, it's the mayor saying to the commissioner, I am behind you and you can start doing things. And I think it's one, that's very important to have the backing of your mayor to give, issue a directive to say, you know, whatever you do is fine by me. As long as you want, you know, keep the goal in mind. I think number two, I think they're starting to become more educated and smart, these community boards, whether through the work of transportation alternatives who are, you know, out there all the time, you know, communicating with leaders of the community board or doing presentations on, you know, what a separated bike lane is. I think also Streets Blog and Street Films have a very big role in, you know, it seems like at least one or two people on every community board read us regularly or know our stuff, show our films, get people, you know, enlighten them to some of the things out there. And I also think the community boards are becoming a little younger.
Community boards, that's the local, the smallest unit of city government in New York.
Yes.
Neighborhood committee.
They do call it I've heard it referred to as, you know, the lowest level of community of city government. But in fact, the community boards are, it's interesting because they have no real power. They have all their power is advisory. But for many, many years, they, you know, especially in my neighborhood, I had community board 6 in Brooklyn. They're you know, if they decided they didn't want a speed hump, then the DOT would go, okay, you don't want a speed hump. That's it.
That's kind of how the neighborhood associations are here.
Yeah.
Same thing.
But now what they're doing is the DOT is coming in there and saying, we're doing this because we want to make the streets safer for your children and bicyclists and people to walk around. And, you know, we're going to put this in. And then they start talking with them. And you'll see the DOT tries to, you know, broker a deal. Maybe this isn't the right spot for it, or maybe something else needs to be done in concert with it. But in the end, almost all the time, they're going to put that speed hump in now, whether the community board...
But it all depends on a strong, enlightened executive at the top.
It really does. It all goes through the mayor, which is why when we first started out Streets Blog and Streets Films, we really were going after the administration because, you know, you could go after the commissioner, and we did as well, but unless you start blaming the mayor for some of the stuff that is not working, then, you know.
We got a taste of that here in San Francisco, because our mayor has never been really that hip to the idea of livable streets, but I think he must have seen your film about the ciclovias down in Bogota.
I was told he did.
And, well, something clicked
Somebody
for him.
Somebody did, yeah.
Something clicked for him somewhere along the way, and he decided it was going to happen. And there was opposition. We had people in Fisherman's Wharf that
businesses
that thought they were going to lose money if there were 4 hours of no traffic on the street.
And that's the same thing happened in New York. There was a lot of businesses that were against it.
But he followed the principle that Gil Peñalosa put forward, the idea of ready, fire, aim. That's what he calls it. And he said, just think about the consequences later. Do what you know is right as the executive, as the mayor. And...
Yeah, Gil and Enrique Peñalosa, who are two brothers from Bogota, Colombia, Enrique was the mayor and Gil was the parks commissioner, are really good about, you know, trying to make our elected leaders a little more brave than they used to be. Mm-hmm. And Enrique did all these wonderful changes about, you know, livable streets and bike lanes and ciclorutas and ciclovia down there. And I think that that was such a success down there and continues to be, that when, you know, you see when mayors all over the country start seeing, they can be looked at as a great, they brought this great program in.
But they don't see it. They don't see it unless they see street films.
Unless they see street films.
Street films makes it all clear what's going on down there.
We try, again, you know, I mean, we're very fortunate that we have, you know, backing. We don't have, like, you know, we don't have a very big staff, but we're able to get by, you know, favors, staying in people's houses and flying out somewhere and trying to show what's going on in that city or, in some cases, country.
I notice you've got different versions of some movies, some mm-hmm. of the important movies. You'll make a 10-minute movie about the Ciclovias down in Bogota, where they close the streets.
Yes.
Or you might have a 2-minute version of that same movie that you can show, say, in San Francisco at a Board of Supervisors meeting.
Yes.
You could put it on, you could plug your computer into the AV, and they can all watch it, and it goes on, it ends up going out onto the, during public comment. You can bring your laptop and show a street film. And it goes out into the public television, to the Board of Supervisors TV. And
well, I mean, you know, we started looking at, you know, we did make a shorter version of that. We've also done a few of our films we've translated to Spanish, because I think that's very important in New York. We, again, need to expand our base. We've also started doing a lot more films in Queens and the Bronx, which, you know...
Yeah, most you were of sort of Manhattan-centric for a long
Manhattan-centric
time.
Manhattan-centric and, like,
that was the big
brownstone
criticism.
Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
And we still, that's still our bread and butter. That's where, you know, a lot of people want to see our stuff. But I think we're starting to expand out. And, again, Queens and the Bronx or
San Francisco, standing up to San Francisco.
And other cities. And, you know, again, the great thing about our films is, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, most of them are between 3 or 4 minutes. The longer form ones are 9, 10, 11 minutes long, mm-hmm. if we think it's an important topic, like Vélib or going to another country or visiting Melbourne. But we try to keep the films, most of them, between 3 or 4 minutes. And anybody can use our films. They can embed them on their blog. They can request them. They can show them at a community board meeting. They can have their own screening. You know, they can get. You can literally email us on the site. There's actually a button that you can request the DVD, and we have a couple of collections that you can check off. And the first one's always free. The second one, we start asking for, you know, a little bit of donation mm-hmm. to cover shipping and handling and the work hours that we put into this. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, anybody can get our films for free if they really want them and use them to motivate people. That was the best thing about the screening was, like, so many people were coming up to me and they were like...
The screening the other night, you showed your films at the Corrette Auditorium here in San Francisco.
Yeah, people were coming up to me and, like, not were they even more, like, just congratulatory. They were just like, I am so pumped up for change. I feel so good now. You know, I mm-hmm. see all this stuff going on all over the country and, you know, here. And they get motivated. And that's, you know, I think that's the biggest accomplishment that we like to say, is that we kind of get people fired up and give them the tools to try to get change in their neighborhood.
Right. Well, I'm sitting here talking really wonky stuff with a guy dressed up as a bee. So, it's Halloween and Critical Mass is going to start.
Yeah, I got to get ready, I guess.
Hour. And I guess...
I'm excited to film it.
Yeah.
Probably. Well, thanks for talking. This is great. I love doing this.
See if you get any hits off of this one.
I'm sure we will.
Well, that's Clarence. Turned out that Friday night was probably the warmest night of the year. No rain. It was the most beautiful night ever in San Francisco on a Halloween. Of course, I dressed up like a police officer and stopped traffic in my neighborhood so that the kids could take over the streets. Kids were all over the place. It was Friday night, Halloween on Friday night. The kids didn't have school the next day, and it was pretty nuts out there in my neighborhood of Sunnyside. And I hear Critical Mass was pretty good, and even though I wasn't there, I can be there vicariously through Clarence's movie, which if you go to bikescape.blogspot.com, I've embedded his movie there under this post. So check it out. It's one of his better ones. Well, here on Bikescape, I find myself talking a lot about New York and San Francisco and often forget about all the things that are happening in between. For instance, in Kansas City, bikes are exploding just like everywhere else, and they're running into the same kinds of problems that we all run into on the coast here. I got a press release Bicycle advocacy groups in Kansas City, Missouri, are fighting to gain access to a new highway bridge being constructed over the Missouri River. The state DOT has designated the bridge to include a bike ped path, but refuses to fund it and refuses to acknowledge the need for it. So the people there have started a grassroots campaign, a pledge drive to raise money, increase awareness, and build public support for local funding. This bridge is a critical connection to join the two halves of the city. It links neighborhoods with jobs and provides recreational opportunities. And they've amassed a good base of local support and now hope to get some wider national exposure. So if you want to help out, or if you live in the area, if it means a lot to you, go to www.letsgokc.com/Paseo, P-A-S-E-O, and get involved with your local community. And wherever your local community is, Bikescape wants to know about what's going on where you are, so send me your emails at bikescape@sbcglobal.net. Send me those press releases. I'll get them on the air. Back to San Francisco. Everybody always looks forward to the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition's Winterfest. Big party every year. If you love bikes and you like great deals on stuff, there's silent auction and all sorts of clothing. There's going to be several bikes for sale. Auction, you get some great deals if you're in the market. This year, among other things, there's going to be a Gary Fisher Simple City 8 bike, the ultimate urban bike, according to the Bike Coalition. You can preview all the bike's gear, local attractions, gift certificates, getaways, all that kind of stuff. And the auction catalog, go to the Bicycle Coalition website at sfbike.org and check it out. There's also, did I mention, there's also lots of beer, and there's music, and it's a lot of fun. It's not just fundraising, although it is fun to go shopping, but it's even more fun to meet all your friends and drink some beer together. Also, as you notice, the days are getting shorter, and you need to buy some new batteries for your lights so you can be seen out on the road. If you don't have a light, well, now's your chance to get one for free. Light up the night with free blinky lights. Hundreds of free bike lights will be distributed to cyclists traveling along the city's major bike corridors on Thursday, December 2nd from 6 to 7 p.m. The Bike Coalition is doing this in conjunction with the Municipal Transportation Agency. They're working to increase rider visibility in the dark hours. So you can check out more information on sfbike.org/lights. For locations and information on how to volunteer. I'm sure there's going to be quite a few locations and there's going to be quite a need for volunteers. And I'm sure you'll get a free light if you volunteer. So spread the word to your friends and neighbors who are riding in the dark and get a poster. You can download it from sfbike.org. Put it up at your school, library, or neighborhood coffee shop. Please note they're targeting cyclists who do not have lights, but you must bring your bicycle to receive a free light. Here's something. Out in my neighborhood in Sunnyside, I live right near City College, and it's a commuter school in the middle of the city. Everybody drives there. Nobody wants to take transit. Nobody rides their bike, and it's crazy. But it's changing, and people are starting to bike over there now. And City College now has a bike co-op called The Bikery, and it's seeking donations of bike parts, wheels, frames, or whole bikes. They'll take wheels, frames, whatever you got. If you don't need it, they can use it. So especially they also need tools and truing stands and work stands. So the Bikery can use your tools and parts and train a whole new generation of bike mechanics done at CCSF. So if you have something to offer, please contact Ildico. And I guess you're going to have to check the blog to find out how to get in touch with Ildico, because there's no information about that here where I'm looking. Reading all this off my cell phone out by the bay here. The Oakland Alameda Ferry just berthed right in front of me, and it's running their engines, but I'm going to push right through with my commentary. I have some commentary today about the economic crisis the country is in. Now, I'm no economist, so I'm not going to pretend to understand what's going on completely, but it does look like we're heading into some bad times. And now when I see that the three major auto companies are coming to Congress with their hat in hand. They flew into Congress on their private jets, no less, to ask for $26 billion to keep their companies afloat and to continue flooding our streets with their infernal machines. I have to draw the line at that point. Now, I understand that there are 10 million car-related jobs, and I also understand that it's pretty much the only industry we have left in this country, where we've become a nation of pixel pushers and hamburger flippers. We don't really actually do anything anymore in this country. But I have something we can do, and we can force the auto companies to change, and they can start building transit. They can start building buses, streetcars, trains, heavy and light rail. Whatever it is that we need, we can do it. We can start building some infrastructure in this country to accommodate bicycles, and we can start to finally start thinking about a green economy. This is imperative, and in the last depression, lots of things happened. We invested lots of money. The WPA came out and invested money in, well, the Golden Gate Bridge was built at that time, the Bay Bridge. There were art projects, and all sorts of the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, with all the dams and electricity that were built at that time. And it was all really well built, and it all still exists to this day, 75 years later. It's quite amazing. And this is the kind of thing we need to be doing. We have new leadership. Committees are changing in Congress, and a new president's coming in just a couple of months. And this is the time, and you need to call your congressperson and your senator and write to the president and even join your local neighborhood association to start things moving. We got to get the ball rolling. There's no time like the present, and this is an unparalleled opportunity when big changes can happen, because moments of crisis like this is when things happen. World War II was when we changed the automobile industry into a war industry, and we need to face the moral equivalent of war right now, and we can do it without shooting up half of Europe. Anyway, that's my rant. Let's get a green economy going. It's time. And I guess that's it for Bikescape. On that note, get my blood pressures up. My goodness. I guess I'm going to calm down now and let you know to please write to me. Let me know your thoughts. And you can write to me at bikescape@sbcglobal.net. You can leave comments on the blog at bikescape.blogspot.com. You can also call and leave a message. The phone number is on the blog. I don't have it on me right now. You can leave a message that can go on the air and go out to millions and millions of people. So with that, let me just remind you, as I always do, keep that rubber side down, and for goodness sake, take the lane. Bye, everybody.
Sometimes I don't know what I'm doing, 'cause sometimes all my days are filled with rain. As I travel down life's highway, things ain't going my way, 'cause there's always someone swerving in my lane. You keep a swerving in my lane, and it's causing lots of danger. I'm a honking on my horn, I'm a shooting you the finger. I keep a switching on my bright lights, but you're just too dim to know when you're swerving on life's highway, you're running someone off the road. The day you drove away, I thought I never could love another. How else could I feel? But now when you run into me, I can't believe I could not see you're all tanked up, but no one's at the wheel. You keep a swerving in my lane, and it's causing lots of danger. I'm a cussing out your name, I'm a shooting you the finger. I
I keep a switching on my bright lights, but you're just too dim to know. When you're swerving on life's highway, you're running someone off the road. And if I ever finally pass you, oh, when I do, and if I'm still alive, I won't ever see you, 'cause I'm ripping out my rear view and I'm shifting it on in to overdrive. But you're just swerving in my lane, and it's causing lots of danger. I'm a stomping on the foot feet, I'm a shooting you the finger. I keep a switching on my bright lights, but you're just too dim to know. When you're swerving on lights